B-Pod Studios.
Inside the Birds podcast show with Jeff Mosher and Adam Kaplan tonight from 6 to 8 o'clock right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. And Jamie, who brings us that fine program? Who brings us the fine program here? I believe it's our friends at DraftKings. And on the line with us right now from Inside the Birds podcast, Jeff Mosher and the Comcast Business Hotline Beyond Fast. What's up, Jeff?
Mark, how are you? Good morning, everybody. Hope everybody's having a great day.
Of course we are, Jeff.
You know, when is it not a good day? Yeah, when is it not a good day, right? Jeff, we're banging our heads against the wall with these two-point conversions that are happening, and we all know the roster was decimated. We all know that. They were still in the spot to try to win that game. They had big drops and all that. Where do you stand on this whole two-point conversion phase here with Doug Peterson?
Do you mean, are you asking me about when he's going for it and when he's not, or just the play design that he's using when he goes for it?
For instance, you don't get in the end zone the entire first half of the game, 7 minutes, 17 seconds left in the third quarter. He finally gets in the end zone, goes for two. What did you make of that play call?
Yeah, I'm saying, you know, and maybe I'm a little old school, but I don't like to necessarily get the two unless I need it at the time.
I agree.
And at that point, you know, because you kind of leave points on the board if you don't make it, obviously. And I would say this: if you're going to go for it for two, you know, he did it on the first touchdown against San Francisco, right? As well, and that was a completely different situation. It was their first touchdown. They thought they had some things going. You almost set that precedent. Then, if you're going to do that, where you just want to be aggressive at certain times, then you should probably be the guy who goes for two after every touchdown. It's going to happen. I mean, maybe you and I will be, 6 feet under. But there's going to be a time when coaches just keep going for two every single time. I know there's a lot of analytics that suggest it's a good idea. It confuses me when Doug decides to be aggressive and when he doesn't. But I will say, I know there's that thought process. If he did go for two, right, and they had 29 points, then before that last touchdown, then he could have just tied the game on a PAT. But if you look, he scored four touchdowns, and he got 28 points. That's an average of 7 per touchdown. He went for it for two earlier and made it. So had he not gone for two earlier, would he have still gone for two on the third touchdown? You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Figure out the chain reaction of when he would have and would not have gone for two. So I don't know that it's fair to say he definitely would have had 29 points in the game had they scored that last touchdown, and all they would have needed was a PAT. It all depends on what he would have done on the prior touchdowns.
Right, and I'm not someone that hates two-point conversions. I just don't understand his logic. I get it in the San Francisco game, first touchdown, show your team you had confidence. I'm not anti-two-point conversion. I just think that there's a time and a place for him, and I thought in three of the four situations, they were rather ill-advised.
Yeah, and to go back to your comment again about San Francisco, I'll say it again. Like, if you're going to do it then you almost set the precedent to just do it all the time.
Right.
Because at that point, it was the total, I'm feeling good, we got our juices flowing, we scored a touchdown, let's do this thing. And it just, you know, you just, it leaves open to, you know, criticism, interpretation of when he's being aggressive and when not. It's not formulaic. Like, baseball is so formulaic now with the analytics. You see what the Tampa Bay Rays do, right? They know, their manager knows, and he said this. He's been on record for this. He's saying, I want every single move I make in a game to be predetermined based on, the script that I drew up before the game. He's like, I don't want to leave anything to chance. I'm not into gut feels. I want everything to be predetermined based on the best outcome that I have pre-researched. And so, that's not what you get. That's not the feeling you get with Doug Peterson. You feel like it's all just kind of, you know, flying by the seat of the pants when I want to go for it, when I don't. And that's not a plan. That's just a gut. That's a feeling.
Speaking with Jeff Mosher, Inside the Birds podcast, I found Carson Wentz's play to be inspiring, really, throughout this game, especially in the second half, more so than Doug, even, you know, a guy that gets a lot of credit for keeping a locker room together and all that. I thought the guy that really carried him through this, especially in the second half, was Carson Wentz. What'd you make of his performance in this game?
Yeah, I thought he was very gutty, very, very courageous. I believe you heard Jason Kelce after the game say that there's, you know, Carson doesn't need to show this team anything. He's already shown what he can do. Just trying to will. I mean, he willed that fourth quarter. He made some tremendous plays. You know, the Travis Fulgham catches were really a really nice touchdown catch, and something we're seeing out of Travis, the ability to go up and get the ball that we really haven't seen out of an Eagles wide receiver in a long time. You know, Alshon Jeffrey was supposed to bring that element, and in some cases he did the first 2 years, but, you know, I think of Alshon as almost not coming, not doing what he did in Chicago, which is just plucking balls out of the air all the time. Fulgham seems to be that guy, but when you go back and watch that, I mean, Carson, you know, he backpedaled just enough, took a hit as he was throwing, flung the ball up in the air, and put it really only where Travis would have the opportunity to make the play and go get it. And that's the kind of thing that you know, Carson, that we've come to expect from Carson over the years, and we weren't seeing in week one and week two. But, Mark, the question you have to ask yourself after this kind of game is how much longer can he continue to take the abuse that he's taking, the countless hits. I think it was another dozen hits on him week after week. He's making a lot of throws with guys in his face. That's not a mm-hmm. good recipe for long-term offensive success.
Jeff, let us know what you felt in the moment yesterday as Baltimore's up 27-14. There's 9:25 to go in the game. The Eagles have 4th and 5 at their own 30-yard line. Plenty, you have 3 timeouts left, plenty of time on the clock, and Doug elects to go for it. Were you okay with it at the time, or were you scratching your head a little bit like I was?
No, you know, I think that time I was okay for it. I mean, you never know how the game is going to finish, but at that time it still looks like Baltimore is dominating this game, and it still looks like the Eagles have not done much other than get that Miles Sanders fumble recovery that J.J. Arcega-Whiteside pounced on for the touchdown, and then the Jason Kroon touchdown that they got right on the drive before that, I believe. I felt like it still seemed like the Ravens were I don't want to say dominating, because Lamar was having a great game, but they were up comfortably, and that the Eagles really needed to make something happen there. You know, if I go back and look at it now, maybe seeing how the game ended, it wasn't the greatest idea, but I felt like at the time, in the moment, that they needed to do something there.
Speaking with Jeff Mosher, Inside the Birds podcast, catch it tonight from 6 to 8, along with Adam Kaplan. Jeff, going forward here, it's crazy. You look at the Eagles, and they are, with the Cowboys lost tonight to the Cardinals, and we'll cross our fingers for that, they're a win out of first place. Yet they're also, they have the 5th best odds of getting the number 1 overall pick, and there's a report about them being buyers. What are we to make of this football team?
Well, I think the report about them being buyers is not, you know, strange, right? I mean, they've bought each year for the last 3 years, and that's because each year for the last 3 years, they've had a chance to either win the division or make the playoffs. And obviously, they, even at 1-4-1, as you just laid out, they've got a chance to make the playoffs and win the division. It's a really bad division. I would question why they would make a move like that, because I don't think the fan base or even ownership is really thrilled if the Eagles win the division with 5 or 6 wins or even 7 wins. You know, and gets bounced out in the first round. I don't think that's considered a successful year. And I think the team is still obviously trying to flip the roster and get younger. So you don't want to be giving up, in my opinion, you know, a decent draft pick for a rental player when the draft picks are what you need going forward. But I think also the next 2 games they have 2 games left, I believe, before the deadline. So you win those 2 games, you're 3-4-1, and I could see Howie Roseman being, you know, compelled right there to try to get some kind of help in here. I guess the question I would have is, who is he trading for? What position?
Right.
They need an offensive lineman, they could use a receiver, they could use a corner, they could use a safety, they could pretty much use someone in any position. So when Howie makes the phone calls, is he talking to, you know, Joe Douglas of Jets saying, give me the best thing you got?
Right. No, I don't know how it goes. Does he dangle Zach Ertz out there if he's healthy? Like, who knows? I don't know where he would go in that situation. But let me ask you this: for Thursday's,
if you're trading Zach Ertz, I almost feel like you're a seller in that situation more than a buyer. I don't know if you're going to get equitable value for Zach Ertz. Or maybe you do. You get a really good linebacker, but now you're out your best tight end. So does that make you any better?
Yeah, I don't know. I honestly don't know. If it gets you a linebacker, then maybe it does. But let me ask you this, because you got the game coming up Thursday against the Giants here. Deshaun, Alshon, Avante, Lane, and Matt Pryor. Are all these guys basically held out for this game against the Ravens because they got a quick turnaround? How many of those injured guys do you think come back for Thursday?
Well, the Lane one is really interesting. It's hard to know if, you know, they said he needed rest. So was it just like 4 or 5 days rest and he's available for the Giants game? Or were they thinking that, you know, the Giants game is a game that they knew he couldn't play against Baltimore, wanted to rest it, figured that the short turnaround first Giants game is an easier game to win and maybe have him ready for Dallas? It just depends on how much rest he needs to feel comfortable. Pryor, I would think, could come back because it's not him who had COVID. He was just around someone.
Right.
That's my understanding of him on the list. But the question is this. He is the only guy you have that can play guard and tackle. So as bad as Jamon Brown was at guard yesterday, the fact that Lane might not be able to play and that your backup tackle is got in the game, and Brett Toth, he's never played an NFL game until yesterday, I don't think you want that guy out there on Thursday night. So you may need to save Pryor as your top backup in case Jack Driscoll, you know, gets hurt, or if Jack Driscoll can't play, Pryor may have to go in there and play right tackle while Jamon Brown holds down right guard. And I do think Deshaun will play, and I'm skeptical on Alshon. He has not fully practiced at all since being back. He's had limited practice. He's had missed practices because of illness. I think you need to see at least 2 full practices from Alshon before he gets on the field. He'll have that opportunity this week, because there will be a couple practices before they play the Giants, but you've got to see him do that before we can say he can play.
Moshe, if we can look forward to the other injuries that happened, do you think Zach Ertz, do you think Miles Sanders, do you think those injuries are bad enough that they're going to miss possibly Thursday or maybe even longer?
Yeah, I'm worried about the Sanders one. You know, you always went with him because, you know, skill position players, they get hurt, and it's hard on short turnarounds to be ready. And, you know, so that's a concern, because if he can't play, you've got Corey Clement, you have Boston Scott. These guys have not been used very much. They haven't, when they have been used, they have not been effective. Offensive line hasn't done a real, you know, great job being consistent enough to open up holes for him. So you kind of wonder on, you know, do they have to pass the ball more? Does Carson take more hits? I know the Giants are a laughing stock, but they have actually been in nearly every single game they've played, and their defense is ahead of their offense. So, you know, you would worry about not having Miles Sanders on there and what that does to the entire offense and the protections for Carson Wentz. Mm-hmm.
Jeff Mosher, catching more tonight with our good friend Adam Kaplan tonight, 6 to 8, Inside the Birds podcast and radio show tonight, 6 to 8, right here on 97.5 The Fanatic. Mosh, thanks so much, brother. I appreciate it.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.